Hello, this is the background information on atmospheric pollutants and air quality. What data is out there and how are the measurements made? This forms part of the resource on air quality and atmospheric pollution based on DEFRA's Air Quality Archive and has been produced by the Primary Science Teaching Trust. Please note this document is intended for teachers of primary children. A separate PowerPoint presentation explaining atmospheric pollutants is available from the full resource. An introduction to measuring air pollutants. Why should we measure air pollutants? Some of the chemicals that are in the air have limits imposed by governments. Above these levels, the chemicals may be harmful to health of people, other animals or plants. These atmospheric chemicals need to be monitored accurately. It's no use in just measuring in one place in the UK on a particular day per year. Different areas, towns, cities, countrysides may have different concentrations of pollutants and at different times of night and day. They may be different at different times of the year. An industry or natural process may only produce chemicals during the evening in the summer months, for example. The wind conditions, that's the strength and direction, may move that pollutant to different places each year, or perhaps they may not move it at all. How can we measure air pollutants in the air around us? Where can we measure these pollutants? Running an air quality network such as DEFRA's is expensive, and so there are a limited number of sites around the UK. The UK's Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, DEFRA, can cite science instruments to make these measurements. First, we'll think about what pollutants are measured, second, how they are measured, and third, we will look at where they have been measured. Most of the pollutants measured in the UK Air Quality Network are called primary pollutants. This means they are produced directly by a source, which could be from transport, for example vehicles of various types, from construction, heating, burning of waste, cleaning agents, and of course natural sources such as from animals, plants, etc. The network focuses on primary pollutants that are produced from human activity. Human activity is also referred to as anthropogenic activity. And we'll look at each of these in turn. Hydrocarbons. Hydrocarbons are chemicals that just contain hydrogen and carbon atoms chemically joined together, or bonded. They are the major components of fuel that's burned in combustion engines that propel vehicles. Some of the unburnt fuel will be released on use, and this is measured by the network. High levels of hydrocarbons will be found near busy roads and near sources such as petrol stations, oil refineries, etc. How are they measured? First of all, the hydrocarbons present in the air are sucked into an instrument called a gas chromatography mass spectrometer. There are other instruments that could be used. A pump sucks the air into a tube containing a solid absorbent material to which the hydrocarbons stick. When enough time has passed, and this is often in terms of several minutes to an hour, the flow of air to the absorbent is shut off and air is directed to a new collecting tube. The solid used as an absorbent must be sticky enough for the hydrocarbons to stick to it, but not sticky that they are permanently stuck, or in fact they shouldn't react to the surface and are lost. Once collected, the solid material is heated to drive off the hydrocarbons sticking to the surface. We will then need to separate out the hydrocarbons, and this is the essence of chromatography. In primary schools, we can look at experiments that separate out mixtures. For example, magnetic and non-magnetic objects, separation by size, for example using sieving, or separate by shape or by colour using our eyes. Children should carry out chromatography experiments using colouring pens or coloured sweets and some kitchen towel. Benzene. Benzene's an example of a hydrocarbon. It has the chemical formula C6H6 for those who are interested. It's produced from unburnt fuel, or as a product of incomplete combustion. It causes cancer and other illnesses. A European study found that people breathe in 220 micrograms of benzene every day due to general atmospheric pollution. A smoker, smoking 20 cigarettes per day, takes in between 1,800 and 7,900 micrograms per day in addition to that that's in the atmosphere. Measurements of benzene from the Marylebone Road in central London from around the year 2000 to present day illustrate some interesting points about air quality. The written version of this document shows a graph of those benzene levels during that time period. The concentration is measured in micrograms per cubic decimeter. The figure shows a clear decline in the level of benzene since the year 2000, where the decline was sharpest from 2000 about 2010, and has been much slower since then. We might ask the question, why benzene has gone down? Some possible reasons include fewer cars, cleaner cars, perhaps there are more electric cars, and cleaner fuel. Perhaps these days there are less benzene molecules in unleaded petrol. There are other ways of showing the data. You could produce some graphs, as in figure 2 in the written version, which shows the levels of benzene in January 2020 versus that in the year 2000. In January 2020, there were much lower levels of benzene in the atmosphere, and there's a lot more variability or change in the January 2000s. Why might this be? Possible reasons include that perhaps weekday and weekend differences in the number of vehicles on the road existed. Perhaps the congestion zone coming into force in London on the 17th of February 2003, and remember Marylebone Road was on the very edge of the zone, has reduced benzene levels. A congestion zone is where a charge is made to bring your vehicle into an area, hoping the cost will put off people, so less vehicles will use the roads. Perhaps cars in the year 2000 were more polluted than in 2020. Perhaps the fuel components were different. Perhaps there was less benzene in either petrol or diesel in the year 2020 compared with 2000. Nitrogen oxides. That's both nitric oxide and nitrogen dioxide. Nitric oxide, chemical formula capital N capital O, is produced inside a combustion engine. Air, which is a mixture mainly of nitrogen and oxygen, is needed in the engine so the oxygen can be used to burn the fuel, whether it's petrol or diesel. Some of the nitrogen and oxygen reacts together to produce nitric oxide. This further combines with other oxygen molecules to create nitrogen dioxide, or NO2. This is because there's a lot of heat and pressure in the internal combustion engine, which allows nitrogen and oxygen to react. Though in normal air conditions, they don't. Nitrogen dioxide and nitric oxide are often referred to as the oxides of nitrogen and are given the formula NOx. Nitric oxide is not considered to be hazardous to health at typical ambient concentrations. Nitrogen dioxide is a poisonous gas that at high concentrations causes inflammation of the airways in animals, which of course includes humans. Nitrogen dioxide gas is also acidic. When nitrogen dioxide dissolves in water, it forms nitric acid. This acid causes corrosive damage to materials and animals. How are nitrogen oxide concentrations measured? Well, the concentration of these gases can be measured using the way the gases react with a poisonous gas called ozone. And we can then measure the light the reaction produces to work out the concentration of the NO and NO2 molecules. If you want to know more about the details of this, you will need to look at the written version of the introduction so you can find out all about the Zeldovich mechanism for such things. The resource at this point, in its written format, shows another graph. The graph gives data for the 11th of February 2020 and shows the levels of NOx and sulfur dioxide gases observed at the curbside site of the Marylebone Road. With children, the teachers could consider the following questions. Now, there are answers to the question prompts on the slides provided for the classroom presentations. The questions are, why is the peak in the morning larger than the peak in the evening? Would this pattern be different at the weekend? And would this pattern be similar in other places in the UK? Carbon monoxide. Primary sources give off carbon monoxide, or CO, directly into the air and account for 55% of world emissions. The two major sources of carbon monoxide are the incomplete combustion of fossil fuels, that's burning with insufficient oxygen present, and biomass burning. Biomass is trees, bushes, and grass. Some carbon monoxide is emitted from the oceans and from vegetation. The incomplete combustion of fossil fuels produces 23% of the global carbon monoxide. This is a poisonous gas and can replace oxygen in the blood. At concentrations above 1,000 parts per million, it's considered immediately dangerous. So how is the carbon monoxide concentration measured? Carbon monoxide can be detected directly using an appropriate light sensor. Using light to make measurements is called spectroscopy. However, by reacting the carbon monoxide with another compound, one of the products can be detected even more sensitively, and so this is the method that's used. Carbon monoxide concentration is measured with a peak performance instrument. The carbon monoxide gas is reacted with another poisonous chemical called mercury oxide. In doing so, it makes mercury vapor. The mercury vapor can be measured by seeing how much ultraviolet light, that's UV light, it absorbs or takes in. This is then a measure of the carbon monoxide present. At this point in the written resource is another graph. The graph shows the carbon monoxide concentrations for August 2000. The concentrations are given in the units of milligrams per cubic meter of air, which is standard. With the children, the teachers could consider the following questions. The answers to these question prompts are also provided in the slide notes in the classroom presentations. Can you work out when the minimum concentration of carbon monoxide was? Can you find out what dates were weekends, that's Saturdays and Sundays? And do the weekend concentrations differ to weekday concentrations? Suggest how this data might look different to that of a winter month such as November 2000. Ozone. Ozone is a form of oxygen. It's a poisonous form of oxygen. We breathe oxygen as the O2 molecule. Ozone is the O3 molecule, and it's present in the atmosphere in tiny amounts, but it is important and is involved in the breakdown of other atmospheric pollutants. Breathing ozone can trigger a variety of health problems, including chest pain, coughing, throat irritation, and airway inflammation. It can also reduce lung function and harm lung tissue. Ozone can worsen bronchitis, emphysema, and asthma, leading to increased medical care. How is ozone measured? Ozone can be measured by absorption of ultraviolet light, UV light. The air is drawn into a chamber using a pump and is illuminated with UV. Ozone effectively absorbs light of a certain wavelength. The concentration of the ozone can then be determined by how much of the UV light is absorbed in the chamber and compared to a chamber without any ozone present. Sulfur dioxide. Sulfur dioxide is the chemical form in SO2. It might be worth noting here that the correct scientific spelling of sulfur has an F in it rather than the more English spelling of sulfur with a PH. Sulfur dioxide gas has many sources, some from nature and some from the things we do and make. Volcanoes can produce SO2. Much of the sulfur dioxide in the atmosphere comes from burning sulfur-containing compounds, such as those found in fossil fuels. It is also produced when some metals are extracted from their ores. Sulfur dioxide actually has many uses, including for the manufacture of sulfuric acid. It also has harmful effects. It dissolves in water, making acid, which corrodes some stonework, poisons lakes and rivers, and kills trees from the top down. It affects the respiratory system, particularly lung function, and can irritate the eyes and aggravates conditions such as asthma. How is sulfur dioxide measured? Sulfur dioxide can be measured using ultraviolet light and making use of spectroscopy. The air containing sulfur dioxide is drawn into a chamber using a pump and then illuminated with ultraviolet light. After absorption of the UV light, the sulfur dioxide molecules are excited to the upper energy levels, and when they return to the ground state, light is emitted with a longer wavelength. By recording this light using a photosensor, the concentration of SO2 can be calculated. Particulates, that's both PM10 and PM2.5. Particulates are tiny pieces of solid dust that's found in the air. They come in many sizes. PM10 is bigger than PM2.5. The number is the size in micrometers. A micrometer is a millionth of a meter. Put another way, a micrometer is a thousandth of a millimeter. A human hair is a tenth of a millimeter. Thus, PM10 could be a tenth of a human hair. Particulate matter, both PM10 and PM2.5, can hang in the air for a long time and so tiny that they can enter deep into the lungs and cause damage to lung tissue when breathed in. How are they measured? There are four methods used to measure PM10 and PM2.5. In all methods, the air is sucked into an apparatus through a particle inlet which separates the particles according to size. The mass of the remaining particles is then determined by one of four methods. These methods may use weighing, the scattering of light, using electron beams, or by the effect of the mass on a spinning disk. For further information about the details of these methods, please see the written material provided. This podcast is based on the background information on atmospheric pollutants and air quality, a resource provided by the Primary Science Teaching Trust. This is an abridged version of that work. The original work was written by Professor Dudley Shellcross, Dr. Anwar Khan, Dr. James Matthews, Ms. Rain Holland, and Tim Harrison of the Atmospheric Chemistry Research Group at the University of Bristol. This version was narrated by Tim Harrison. Thank you for listening.